Let's get down to business.
Business. My business.
Damn, that sounds sexy.
No funny business, no conversation.
And now, back to America's business coach, Coach Ron Tunick.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank. It is not Coach Ron Tunick. I'm sitting in for Coach today. Coach is over in Las Vegas giving a speech to hundreds, if not thousands, of paying customers that want to learn about his expertise in coaching and in salesmanship. Coach will be back on Thursday, so you want to hang in there. If you're a big Coach fan, he will be back on Thursday. And Coach, just if you're listening out there, hurry back. Everybody misses you. We hope to see you soon. We are having a fantastic second hour of the show today, and now we're coming up to one of the guests that I've been looking forward to for really several weeks now. Dr. Horace, or as he's known, Woody Brock, holds 5 different academic degrees. He earned his BA, his MBA, and his MS from no less than Harvard University. He also earned another master's and his PhD from Princeton University in mathematical economics and political philosophy. He was elected as an Andrew Mellon Fellowship Bicentennial Fellow back in 1976. Dr. Brock studied under Kenneth Arrow, professor of economics, and John C. Harnessy, who is also a professor of economics at the University of California at Berkeley. It just so happens that both of them were winners of the Nobel Prize in economics. Dr. Brock founded the Strategic Economic Decisions, or SED for short, back in 1985. And in so doing, he was sponsored by Fidelity, GE Capital, IBM, pension funds, and other institutions looking for a much deeper level of understanding and analysis of interest rates and the economy. Dr. Brock has authored a series of op-ed pieces in the New York Times and the International Herald Tribune. His speaking engagements have included audiences at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, among many others. Dr. Brock has also authored Interest Rate Insight and had the first expert system developed for financial markets. Welcome to the show, Dr. Brock. How are you doing today?
Just fine, thanks.
Well, you've written a wonderful book. It's titled American Gridlock, Why the Right and the Left Are Both Wrong, Common Sense 101 Solutions to the Economic Crisis. And goodness knows we need some of those solutions. But I want to start with the subtitle of your book, Why the Right and the Left Are Both Wrong. The U.S. Congress right now has a dismal 19% approval rating by the American people, that it seems that less than 20% of Americans think that our politicians are doing what we elected them to do. And as you say in the subtitle of your book, you assert that the left wing and the right wing ideologues talk really past each other, and neither side admits that the other side has any good ideas. And the battle over our economy with the social ills is pitched free market capitalism versus government-controlled economy. It's an either-or dilemma in which neither side wins. So how do we get beyond this gridlock and move to more productive solutions?
Well, the point of the book is to answer that, not just to talk about it. And you're quite correct. The new Pew Foundation poll shows that Americans are more concerned about gridlock, about the failure of Washington to solve any of our problems, than anything else. It is a disgrace. We all know it. What the book does is say, here we've got 5 crises, things like bankruptcy for Medicare and Social Security, or this lost decade, quote-unquote, that we're in, where the economy just doesn't grow and the kids don't get jobs. Or what do you do to stand up to China, who's been bullying us for 25 years, and other crises. What do you do? And what I show is that by using new ways of thinking, technically, they're all sort of branches of what's called deductive logic, but new things like game theory. You remember John Nash, The Beautiful Mind?
Yes, I do.
He gave us game theory, or the economics of uncertainty from Kenneth Arrow at Stanford, and other different things. Using new tools, new ways of thinking, you can arrive at win-win solutions to these big, monstrous problems. They're win-win solutions that don't require the left to gouge the right or the right to gouge. These new solutions, therefore, make it possible to transcend, to bypass this deafening dialogue of the deaf, which is driving everybody crazy, that every night MSNBC is shouting at Fox and Fox at them. It's insulting. So by showing that there are solutions that don't require this polarization, you therefore hopefully can begin to break gridlock.
And I like the idea, Dr. Brock, of finding those solutions. I want to dig into many of them with you. But before we get there, how did we become so polarized? I mean, you just mentioned MSNBC yelling at CNN or yelling at Fox. The reality is that it must be doing some good because the ratings, you know, they wouldn't have advertisers if it wasn't something that the American people wanted to hear.
I'm not sure that's quite fair. The American people may have been amused for a while When you're sleeping in the back seat of your ever smaller car, you stop being amused. People are fed up and frustrated, as your initial comment, I think, made clear. The reasons for this have to do with technology shortening our attention spans. Do you think that the serious issues of any century were ever solved by sound bites? It's insulting to think that they would be. It came from the culture wars when I was a student, the shouting matches that began with the Vietnam War, feminism, the politics of the 70s. It was black and white. I'm right, you're wrong. Time magazine's cover, is God dead? It's a very unpleasant period when people polarize. And one thing led to the next, and as you said, the media found you could keep people's interest if they watched a shouting match rather than a proper debate. All of that is fine until you find that neither you nor your son or daughter have a job. And people don't think it's funny anymore. We need more.
My guest is Dr. Woody Brock, author of the book American Gridlock. So let's talk about breaking the gridlock. Let's tackle some of the central issues that are going to be coming up in the 2012 presidential election. And I want to start with the Warren Buffett rule. And that rule is Warren Buffett pays less in taxes as a percentage than his secretary does. Now, I find it interesting his secretary is buying a second home, but put that aside for just a minute. How do we reframe this discussion so that it doesn't deteriorate into a battle between the 1% and the 99%?
Well, you're talking about probably the deepest of all questions in political theory, fair shares, who gets how much of a pie. Warren Buffett, of course, is right. It's outrageous that his tax, the share of his income, is lower than that of his receptionist or secretary. Most of us agree with the progressive income tax, for reasons going back hundreds of years, that the wealthy should pay a slightly higher share than not. And we somehow got this all backwards. But the larger issue here, it really goes right back to Karl Marx. In his Communist Manifesto, he said famously, from each according to his contribution, to each according to his needs. You remember that famous statement?
Of course I do, sure.
Well, the right wing grabbed onto this notion, well, I contributed. I built the company. I deserve more. I keep more. Don't anyone take my wealth away from me. And the left wing sort of said, well, we're more needy. We have a claim on your wealth. We're the ones with greater needs. Mother Teresa would favor us rather than the rich. So it's easy to see how it sort of devolves into the shouting match. What I do in my work in this field, which is really my principal research earlier in my life, I never thought it would become fashionable, but now it is. The thing that I did is to show that all of us, say between 8 and 5 in the day when we're working, basically would agree with to each according to his contribution. If Tom Brady is paid half the bonus of somebody who sits on the bench, how long would the Patriots be around?
Not very.
They'd all lose their jobs. So economics says you should be paid more if you're worth more and contribute more. If you sell more Volvos than I do, you get a better bonus than I do. Life wouldn't work if you didn't do that, correct?
Well, not in our economic system, absolutely. I mean, that's
the
foundation.
Pretty true in any system. It's basic human incentives. Now, let's go home. It's 9 o'clock at night. We finished dinner. I'm going to work from 9 to 11. I'm going to support my favorite charity. I'm asked to contribute to 3 charities. Or I'm going to write my will. Who do I give the money to? Well, I'm going to give the money to those in my family who are more needy. If I have 2 nephews that will inherit nothing and 2 nieces that will inherit $20 million each, obviously, I'm going to be concerned with the greater needs of my nephews, correct?
All right.
Of course. Excuse me. Am I a communist for saying that? There's no one listening who wouldn't agree. Likewise, who disagree with the fact that at work, if I contribute 10 times more, I should get more? So the point here is we need both contribution justice and need justice, and we need them integrated into a single theory, which is what I have done, and this is not really, I don't think, a topic for this interview. So you can break the gridlock by making everyone realize that we're all, both left-wing and right-wing, depending on the circumstances when we're deciding who gets how much.
All right. Now, fundamental to that discussion, Dr. Brock, is the whole idea of a progressive tax and that we want a progressive tax. How would a flat tax be better than a progressive tax in solving this particular dilemma?
Well, a flat tax is only good if you think that it's extremely simple. It's never going to happen, because of the simple fact that 10%, let's say, of a person's income who makes $20,000 a year is so much more painful for them than 10% of someone that makes $2 million a year that you're just, I don't think, going to see it. But the fact of the matter is flat tax has nothing really to do with it. The important point is you can now show, both intuitively and mathematically if you want, that a progressive tax, where people pay more as a share of a larger income, is the right way to go. And almost everybody accepts this. I don't think we need to really discuss the flat tax.
All right, fair enough. My guest is Dr. Woody Brock, author of the book, American Gridlock, Why the Right and the Left Are Both Wrong, Common Sense 101 Solutions to the Economic Crisis. Let's take a look at another central issue here in the 2012 election, and that is Obamacare. Obamacare represents...
Boy, my favorite topic.
Oh, good. I'm glad I'm playing to your strengths here.
Let's get right slam bang down to that one.
Let's do it. Let's just dive right
here
in.
Here we have an example of what I call higher order thinking. Solving a problem in a win-win manner, okay? Obamacare focused on extending the demand for health care. So a lot of people now have insurance, correct?
Right.
It failed, however, to deal with the supply side.
Correct.
Many people now call their doctors with their new insurance policies, and the phones don't answer. Also, doctors are getting out of business because the administration is saying, we're going to pay you less per procedure. Hence, fewer and fewer people are taking Medicare patients. Furthermore, we now think it's going to raise the cost of health care. So let's do it backwards. Let's pretend we never heard of Obamacare. I want three things out of a healthcare system, and I think everyone listening does too. Number one, I want basically universal coverage. Forget the cost. B, with lots of people having more coverage, I want there to be more services delivered so that people will find their phones are answered and they get to see the doctor. Would you agree?
Well, I agree with the second one. We'll come back to universal coverage in a minute, but go on.
You and I know you could never have coverage. Because, of course, we can't afford it. Bear with me.
All right.
Obama's purpose was to extend coverage, whether you call it universal, but also to slow down the growth of costs, which are now 18.5% of GDP in America, on their way to 30. Correct?
Correct. I mean, that's the staggering part.
It now turns out they think it's going to increase. We'll be bankrupt if we're spending 35% of our GDP on health care. There'll be no Pentagon.
That's right.
So, here, you know what my third goal is?
What is that?
I want to take the share of GDP and cut it in half. I want this. I want more people to have more services, much more coverage, and the total bill of the nation be 10% or even less of GDP. Okay?
All right.
You're going to say that's impossible. Mr. Brock, you want your cake and eat it too. You bet I do. So here you go. In the back of the book is a proof. You have to hide these things because the public doesn't like this. But the editors insisted I put in a formal proof. The point is there is one and only one way to have all three. Literally, it's impossible. All you have to do is make sure that the supply grows faster than the demand. In which case, you will find the total national cost of health care is an arc. It peaks and then goes down, literally, in the long run, to zero. You won't believe this is true. So let me give an example. The phone calls you made in 1980, all of them, all year long, everyone listening, the nation's share of GDP that went for phone calls, okay?
All right.
Scale that up to the fact we have more people today. Let's say we have the same number of calls per minute and so forth and so on. Do you know that the nation's bill for that as a share of GDP has dropped by 90%?
Oh, dramatic, yes.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
Guess why?
Because there are more carriers.
It out faster than demand.
Right.
That's not an opinion. It's not left wing, not right wing. It is a theorem. You cannot disagree. The Obamacare tragedy, to me, is that all the emphasis is put upon more access, meaning more demand for health care, and nothing to do with more supply.
Hear, hear.
We need automated doctors. We need to triple the output of doctors in schools. We need all kinds of things that are obvious common sense 101, and they were not addressed.
My guest is Dr. Woody Brock, author of the book American Gridlock, and I couldn't agree with you more. So the question is, how do we get more doctors? I mean, the American Medical Association has really been contributing to the high cost of doctors' fees by limiting the number of doctors, limiting the number of accredited schools where you can get a medical education. Should the monopoly of the AMA over medical school accreditation be revoked?
Completely. Excuse me, did I hear you describe AT&T? It had a total monopoly. What happened to it?
It got broken up.
The baby bells broken up. Then you had competition. Then you had innovation. And your kids now get free phone calls. And when I was 16 at school, it cost me $5 to call my grandmother in Philadelphia. And then those dollars were much more valuable.
Yes.
So the point is, what did we do when you had a monopoly on oil? You busted up Standard Oil. What did you do when we had a monopoly in the American Tobacco Company? We busted it up into eight other companies. So the point is, The AMA actually isn't resistant to this as much as you think, because 25% of the nation's doctors are due to retire in 23 years. They know a crisis is coming. The supply side has been shockingly ignored, and we've got to go at it with everything we have: automated doctors, expert systems. Once upon a time, the legal profession wouldn't allow paralegals. Remember that?
I do.
Well, now we have them. You're going to have nurse aides. You're going to have Walmart little booths. You can go in and have your blood pressure and blood taken and be diagnosed. It's coming.
Wonderful. That's great. I couldn't agree with you more. My guest is Dr. Woody Brock, author of the book American Gridlock: Why the Right and the Left Are Both Wrong, Common Sense 101 Solutions to the Economic Crisis. Woody, no doubt you have piqued the interest of some of my listeners out there. If they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, you know, these days I'm not very up on all these things, but www.americangridlock.com is the book's website. And it'll take you anywhere. AmericanGridlock.com.
AmericanGridlock.com.
You just go to Amazon and you punch in American Gridlock. It's a piece of cake, and you'll get all the reviews and endorsements by eminent people. Okay?
It is great. It is a wonderful read, Woody. As I said, I've been looking forward to this conversation for some time. Thank you for being my guest here on The Business of Life. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you very much.